We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with an item from the Hereford Times read by Charlotte Green.
Fit, active, attractive lady wishes to meet man with dog to walk the Malvern Hills. Will supply dog food.
Thanks to Howard and Davril Owens for sending us that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Roy Hattersley. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, which minister is trying to put the rails back on track?
Prezza, I suppose, is it? John Prescott. This is not really the most hilarious subject. A lot of people died in a rail crash a couple of weeks ago, and Prescott has summoned a kind of council of war, rail companies, any other interested parties, to discuss what to do about it all. He has his own solution, which is to have a motorcade to take him around the country. And if only commuters from Reading and points west would follow his example, none of this would have happened. He's getting tough, and he's not going to resign, and it's nothing to do with privatisation. Well, I don't know whose fault it is, but it's certainly not his.
It's just a lot of hysteria, though, isn't it? I mean, that's the trouble with these people in train crashes. They just lack that stiff upper lip dignity that has seen us through two world wars.
I don't think we're joking about the crash so much as about Prescott. I mean, there's plenty of jokes in Prescott, aren't there, Roy? You know him very well, don't you?
I know extremely well, and I can't think of a funny thing to say about him. To be absolutely frank, I can't think of a serious thing to say about him.
2 points to Francis. Roy, whose visit, is it safe, Tibet, was dogged by controversy?
What to wear? Tibet.
Tibet, dear.
Tibet. Oh, well, this is that Chinese gentleman who's come over. And he's here to sell a lot of things, billions of pounds worth of things. And he will only sell them if we don't talk about his bad behaviour to minorities. And therefore, the Metropolitan Police, great men all, have been preventing people from waving flags in his direction because it's illegal to wave flags in royal parks. Surprisingly to those people who've been waving royal flags in parks for the last 150 years.
It's astonishing, isn't it? If only Milosevic had had something to sell us, he'd have got off all right. He'd have been down the road now, wouldn't he, having dinner with Blair. Blair's choice of fascist, vicious dictators that he wants to support is based entirely on whether they come in with a few bob.
Lord Howe was on the PM programme and they were saying, why did they stop the demonstrations? And he said, well, demonstrations can be very upsetting for some people, especially those people who aren't used to seeing them.
They so wanted him to feel at home that a guardsman with a fixed bayonet attacked someone who went out and protested at the car going past. It's absolutely shocking.
Police in the mall managed to tackle and bring to the ground a man just a few feet from the Queen, shouting demented anti-Chinese propaganda. Prince Philip was later released. Two points to Roy. Jeremy, who won't retreat over policemen on the beat?
Oh, is this the strange new government counting system? All these ministers are coming up with these bizarre new figures. Alan Milburn's way of getting the waiting lists down is to pretend that everybody on the hospital waiting list is actually a heart specialist. And Jack Straw is just coming out with these things that are sort of true but nonsense, like there are 58 million more people in Britain than there would be if there weren't any people. I'm 11 feet tall. Look at my 8 hands I've got here. But it's revenge, really, because on a demonstration, police always seriously underestimate the number of left-wing people on demonstrations, so it is revenge that people should seriously overestimate the number of policemen that there are, I think. So there are now 50 million police outside the Chinese embassy, battering merry hell out of Tibetans as we speak.
But there was a headline that I saw saying Straw accused of misleading voters over 5,000 police, which I don't think is true at all. I don't think he misled any voters. He just misled delegates at the Labour Party conference, who are the only people in the entire country who believe everything they're told by ministers.
Home Secretary Jack Straw has refused to back down despite claims that his pledge of 5,000 new beat officers was as accurate as Geoffrey Archer's curriculum vitae. Mr. Straw's economy with the actualité was revealed in a leaked memo from the newly appointed Health Secretary, Alan Milburn. Mr. Milburn's aides said he was eager to get on with his new job and couldn't wait to meet doctors and nurses. So at least he understands how the patients feel. 2 points to Jeremy. Alan, listen to this.
Commitment, you're an embarrassment. Yes, an embarrassment, a living endorsement. The intention that you have booked was an intention that was overlooked. They say, stay away.
Embarrassment by madness. Alan, which of Tony's ex-friends is being told to keep his embarrassing revelations to himself?
Oh, this is, please, Mr. Robinson. Don't come out with your memoirs. It is the trouble is we can't mention Geoffrey Robinson without mentioning Geoffrey Robinson's friend. And we all have very big notes that have been passed around saying don't mention Geoffrey Robinson's friend. So I don't know who this is about, really. But this is it's a nameless friend of both the Prime Minister and possibly the Director General of this august organisation. It's called August because that's when he leaves. And I like the man myself, although I can't mention myself as a friend of John Burt because we can't mention that we're friends with John Burt. But this man, who isn't either of the people we can't mention or indeed all seven of them, wants to produce a book. I don't know whose name he's going to put on the title, but he wants to do his memoirs, and this will embarrass whoever the Prime Minister is called.
But you can mention him. There's no reason at all why you shouldn't mention him. You can mention him in a complimentary way. You can say what a marvellous man Mandelson is. There's no prohibition on that.
Would you like to say that, Roy? You said the M-word.
You can say it if you want to, but what you can't say is what Paris said on television about it.
What did Paris say on television?
I can't say it.
What a marvellous friend to have, Geoffrey Robinson. It's like, can I have £373,000? Yeah, all right. Go on, cash or cheque. And the bizarre idea that you have people who give money to you, but you don't know who they are. Because you've got to ask people. You can't go around with a bag on your head begging, because people will just... Well, if you've got a bag on your head, they'll assume you're Robin Cook, I suppose. You've got to go to somebody like Geoffrey Robinson and say, we're having a surprise election campaign for Tony, but he doesn't know anything about it. You can't have a receipt, but can we have £250,000?
Former Paymaster General Geoffrey Robinson claims he's being warned against revealing any facts in his book that might embarrass Tony Blair. Nasty rumours about Mr. Robinson's business deals are said to have originated from the Mandelson camp. Oop, sorry, we can't use certain words relating to the Northern Ireland minister. So the rumours are said to have come from Mr. Mandelson's group of supporters. Scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. And before we start round two, here's a cutting from the Guardian corrections column.
The building illustrating Simon Hoggart's diary in Saturday's Review was not Cheltenham Town Hall, as the caption suggested it might be. It was Boots the Chemist.
Our thanks to Diane Withers in Bristol. Francis, why was BT feeling as sick as a parrot?
It's probably about British Telecom and parrots.
Yes?
I don't think there's anything.
Well, who says sick as a parrot?
Footballers.
I know that.
That's your answer.
Well, some footballers.
Well, the England-Scotland game, Wembley Stadium, was selling tickets. You don't mean that thing. No.
You do mean
that thing.
Well, it's the fact that the phone lines were jammed. The only way to get a ticket, provided you're an Englishman, not a Scot, because none of the Scots are going to be allowed. And they've actually taken the issue to the Commission for Racial Equality. None of the Scots are going to be allowed anywhere near this qualifying match. And the only way to get it is a hotline. And everybody who rang the hotline found that the phone was engaged, so nobody could get any tickets. So there'll be nobody at this match at all.
And if you had lots of them got through to minicab firms and Dala pizza companies instead.
I just wanted to argue with the idea that footballers all say sick as a parrot. No Chelsea footballer ever says sick as a parrot because no Chelsea footballer can speak English.
They're not letting the Scots have any tickets, are they?
No. Mm.
They turned down anyone with a Scottish accent. They just said, look, we don't want any trouble, and hang up. And so the Scots are only getting 7,000 out of 36, which means the English are getting 29,000. Why doesn't England just go the whole hog and field four times as many players to secure the result?
1.25 million English football fans short-circuited the Wembley Telephone Exchange trying to get tickets for the England-Scotland Euro 2000 qualifying match. Thousands of callers were mistakenly put through to a Norwich branch of Autoglass. A spokesman of the company says this has resulted in a sell-out crowd for an eagerly anticipated windscreen installation on November the 7th. Jeremy, listen to this. Bed by Fox. Jeremy, who refused to get out of bed for anything less than the Turner Prize?
Tracy Emin, who seems quite sweet, I think, and she's put her bed in an art gallery, which troubles me because where's she sleeping? She didn't think of that, did she? Maybe she sleeps in the gallery at night as a kind of installation performance art thing after it's closed and everyone's gone, which would be quite a Buddhist thing in a way, wouldn't it? But she's put her bed, but obviously in a bit of a hurry because the sheets weren't washed and there was all paper hankies and tampons and vodka bottles and stuff, you know.
She had a decent daily. The whole history of art would have been different.
Yeah, no, but I think she should have washed the sheets. I mean, call me old-fashioned, but I think if you're going to be exhibited in the gallery, you should make an effort.
Tracy Emin is the hot favourite to win this year's Turner Prize with her exhibit My Bed. The curator of the Tate said the work shows that Tracy should be classed alongside the Impressionists, as she's only in it for the money. 2 points to Jeremy. Alan, which headmistress had a way with numbers that failed to add up?
I've no idea.
You know, don't we? Do you know? Embezzlement, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a headmistress who embezzles some of the funds, the nation's money, by applying for funds to support pupils who were not in her school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about 70 extra points for us across.
Well, I'd be even more pleased if you'd told us what the answer was.
You just tell me it was the answer.
Well, then you're stumbling there, but if you actually know what happened, then that would be a great help.
Well, what happened is a headmistress claimed to have pupils in the school who were not there and got allowances for those pupils, even though they were purely imaginary.
All right, a point and a
half. Well, she was imagining them, or they were the imaginary friends of some of the pupils there.
To be absolutely frank, and it's important that we should in these issues, she wasn't really imagining them at all. She knew they weren't there.
Damn her!
She was pretending that they were there. So imaginary was quite the wrong word to use. And I withdraw my application for a point.
Do we now have to apply for points? No, John Burt, hey. Head teachers are now forces of conservatism. Officially, Blair, the conservatism finder general, has... When he said at the Labour conference that Martin Luther King was killed by forces of conservatism, you don't think it was a conspiracy by the teaching unions who knew that Martin Luther King was secretly planning to campaign for a scheme for performance-related pay, do you?
Headmistress Rhiannon Jones resigned from Ynys Mardy School in South Wales after allegations that she'd added bogus pupils to the roll to gain extra money for the school. Well, you didn't know any of that. The figures were discovered as a result of a dispute between the school and the National Union of Teachers. Members said they would refuse to teach classes of 40, but were assured that 10 of them would be permanent truants. So the scores at the end of round two, Francis and Roy with 7 points, are leading Alan and Jeremy, who have only 6 points. And we start round three with a cutting from the County Echo.
A black attaché case at the entrance to Fishguard Harbour caused a major bomb scare on Wednesday morning. The bomb disposal unit carried out a controlled detonation. A short time later, police confirmed that the case had contained an accordion and a kebab, neither of which would be of much use again.
Thanks to Beatrix Davis of Pembroke for that. Roy, listen to this.
Here in my car, I feel safest of all. I can lock all my doors.
Roy, who'll soon be driven to despair in Greenwich?
Driven to despair. There are prohibitions on who can drive to Greenwich and who cannot. And they're easy to understand because the only people who can are ministers. Everybody else has to go by public transport.
Indeed, wives with big hair will be all right.
Indeed, Greenwich is going to be virtually under siege. There are going to be times at which people can leave their houses, regulations into how many children you can have at any one time. That's taking them to the dome, not having them at home. But it's really a minister's car park which is going to be there, and everybody else must go on public transport.
Well, it's even going to be a struggle for ministers because it's only got 300 spaces, and John Prescott will need most of those. So poor old Blair will have to come on foot across the Thames, walking on water, I suppose.
It was the news that access to the Millennium Dome will be car-free, with the exception of 300 parking spaces for VIPs. Despite a volley of criticism, the Minister for London, Keith Hill, said this was a policy the government would not be walking away from. They'll just be getting into the usual chauffeur-driven limousines. Jeremy, why does the future look bright for the single female?
I don't know exactly. At all.
Okay.
Do you know, Alan?
Is it to do with the fact we'll all be going to be living alone in the year 2050?
Yes.
There's been a report, the University of Essex or somewhere where they are. Yeah, every right to be lonely. By the year 2050, everybody will be living in a hole in the ground. There won't be any universities because you'll go to a virtual university and take part in the virtual boat race. But this will be very good for women because they are more successful, they are more driven, and they're better at living alone.
Yeah.
It's a report that doesn't bear very much analysis. Because it says in the year 2010, all the men will be married and all the women will be single.
Is that true, that women are much happier if they live on their own?
Yes.
Who do you blame?
I always love it when Mrs. Burt comes to the show.
who do you blame for things, then? Come home from work and say, well, I see nothing's been done around here. Who will have to do it myself as usual?
According to a report, Britain Towards 2010, compiled by Professor Richard Skase, the next millennium will see a world dominated by women. If he's right, dollar bills will become dollar Hillaries. Army majors will be called Thatchers. And Britain will be ruled by Queen Camilla from her palace at Barbara Castle. Alan, whose claim of authorship is facing a steward's inquiry?
Oh, this is the horsey one. This is Dick Francis. Dear Dick Francis, the man Devon Locke fell under him. And the Queen Mother thereafter loved him and bought all his books, thinking they were all his books. But he has a wife called Mary, who is suspected, actually. There is another author with a wife called Mary, who is even marically more literate than Mary Frances. But Mary Frances is suspected of writing her husband's books. But I think, you know, everybody involved in these collaborations is probably a bit dodgy. I've always suspected that Roy Hatters's book about Buster the Dog, though notionally written by Buster the Dog, was actually written by Buster the Dog. It's Mrs. Dick Francis.
It raises a very interesting question because, you know, Dick Francis became famous by almost winning the Grand National and his horse just stopping before the winning post. And people saying, how could an experienced jockey allow that to happen? Now, was his wife really riding the horse? That's the question.
No, his wife was in the back saying, just pull over here. Good. Just stop here. Come on. What happens if I pull this?
Biographer of racing thriller writer Dick Francis has suggested the books are actually written by his wife. Foreign secretary and part-time racing tipster Robin Cook is a fan. Pundits speculate that in the early 1990s he may have been offered 1,000-to-1 odds that one day he would support arms sales to Indonesia. And the scores at the end of round 3 are Francis and Roy 11, but Alan and Jeremy have taken the lead with 12 points. And before we start the long-awaited final round, here are some instructions issued at a wedding in Gloucestershire.
Would you please wait until the couple have left the church grounds before throwing anything at them?
Thanks to Ted Shepherd for that. Francis, your piece of music.
Oh,
the death scene from Boris Goodenough. Francis, which pair have refused to work together because they couldn't get on good enough?
It's a Russian conductor and a Russian opera singer, a bass, who were going to do a concert at the Albert Hall in memory of Rudolf Nureyev. And they've fallen out. Artistic differences. They've fallen out over Mussorgsky and they've stomped off to Moscow in a huff and the concert's been cancelled. This is what happens with the artistic temperament. This burly, bearded Russian opera singer growling, saying, "I am going to do Mussorgsky my way. The slow, basso profundo way."
Frank Dobson's first campaign meeting.
Well, yeah, I think the conductor was rather thinking more in terms of a slightly jazzed up sort of Spice Girly version of it to get in the punters. A great tragedy, I'm sure.
Yes, it was. A planned tribute to the late Rudolf Nureyev at the Royal Albert Hall was cancelled after a dispute between the conductor, Gennady Zalkovich, and the opera singer, Nikolai Gioroff. Royal Albert Hall staff say they haven't seen clashes so bad since the Nolan Sisters' farewell concert. Friends of the conductor describe what happens on stage as an enormous balls-up, which in its own way was a tremendous tribute to the memory of Nureyev. So 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, who treated the crowd to a thriller of a night out in Barnstaple?
Oh, now that we don't know. Was that strange, masked, deluded man Michael Jackson? Or was it, cunningly, someone from Stars in Their Eyes? Was it a 40-stone, bearded white woman? Who said, "Tonight, Barnstaple, I'm going to be Michael Jackson." And then there was some mist. And out she came with some white makeup on and a glove. And no one knows, was it really Michael Jackson? Because they're all weird down in the West Country anyway. And they wouldn't know. I mean, if Michael Jackson arrives, "Ah, stranger be you, boy." "Oh, they had a turn on there once. Young feller sang a song. Weren't never seen again. Will I microwave your pasty, young sir? We are simple but violent folk." Michael Jackson.
Yes.
But who is now also a TV executive and a paratrooper in Kosovo, isn't he? He's bloody everywhere. That would be terrible if you pay loads of money to go to a theatre in Barnstaple and you saw a BBC executive giving a talk on how we need more programmes with edge. It's ridiculous. How can any self-respecting TV executive have the name of a famous pop singer? It's ludicrous. Walking into the jet and say, "Hello, I'm Michael Jackson." "No, you're bloody not." "Probably obvious that you're not Michael Jackson. This is my assistant, Aretha Franklin." "No, she isn't. She's someone else."
It was claimed that international superstar Michael Jackson had performed an impromptu half-hour concert at a local karate club in Barnstaple.
Could have been Elvis. He liked karate. Not dead, you know. Just fat.
Alan, which village people took offence at offence?
Sorry, I'm still listening to him. I'm sorry, Simon. What
which village people took offence at offence?
This was on about that lunatic in the village, a man called Baum, and he built a fence. And the local parish council said, "We don't like your fence, take it down." So he then filed 62 letters of complaint about everything, about the pub sign and the traffic lights and everybody else's house and roof and all the rest of it. And it's somewhere, it's not Slipwood.
It's in the West Country.
It's called Bodwin. It's called Bodwin or something like that.
Bawdrip.
Bawdrick. Oh, Bawdrick, is it?
No, nearly.
Yeah, I mean, he filed 62 letters of complaint about planning infringements as he saw them.
There's a big schism, isn't there, between the people who've lived in the village all their lives and the people that have only lived there for about 40 years. Because they're not from round these parts. You be newcomers.
Can you do any other accents?
No.
3 miles east of Honiton. You
used to do James Cagney, didn't you?
Did I used to do James Cagney?
Yes, years ago.
What, on the programme?
Yeah.
Do Did I?
Well, I thought so.
Was it James Cagney that lived in Totnes, as I remember?
Ah. Oh, James Cagney, the aromatherapist. Ah.
The dispute about a garden fence has escalated into a huge row in the village of Bordrip. Villagers worried that their overgrown flower beds might be a road safety hazard are being urged to tune into a special edition of Gardener's Question Time hosted by Jeremy Clarkson. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is a cutting from the television critic of the time. There's a man called Paul Hoggart, who might possibly be the brother of a certain person.
Who can say?
Popular radio presenter. Anyway, an apology. In my review of the first episode of St. Paul's, BBC Two, I inadvertently misquoted Mr. John Mustian, the cathedral scaffolder and cleaner. The quality of the review tape was not good, and I thought he referred to some of the bastards. In fact, he said, some of the parsons.
Roy.
Well, this is a piece of advice on etiquette provided by Drusilla Bayfuss, who had a letter asking her what is the right way to behave when visiting a toilet at the same time as one's VIP boss, a dilemma all of us have faced from time to time. And Drusilla says this, the fine point may arise when you are expected to continue any conversation over the lavatory cubicle wall. The important thing is not to dry up.
Jeremy.
This is from the Wembley Observer, sent in by Gordon Richards. 50 residents from Ogilvie Court Nursing Home, Wembley Park, had a fun day out at the seaside in sunny Clacton, thanks to the Co-op. The Cooperative Funeral Service of Church Lane, Kingsbury, gave an unexpected day out to the pensioners.
Thank you all. Let's look now at the final scores, which are Francis and Roy, 13 points, but Alan and Jeremy, this week's winners, with 18 points. With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Jeremy Hardy and Roy Hattersley. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.